It's been a hard week. I want to just say a brief word about that, because I think sometimes we forget that our Christianity is practical. We need something to go along with our practical Christianity, and that's this. We have not only lost a really fine friend, but we've also lost a part of Happy that really needs to be replaced fairly quickly, because it was a part that reached out into the community in a way that had a great effect. It was a protection in many ways from the way that Jackie ran his service station and kind of kept an eye on the different people that were coming into town. It kept us from getting a truck stop. I always wondered what would be so bad about that, and Scott told me his dad is a judge, and his dad had warned him, you don't want any truck stops because they bring so much drugs, they bring so much crime into a town, really overwhelms the system. You have to hire full-time police for something like that, and it just brings in a certain element of risk and danger that is serious as far as our children go. And that's kind of the practical part that I wanted to just mention at the outset. We need to be praying about this. It will have an effect from our sweet ladies in town who are not able to take care of something as simple as a flat tire or pumping their gas, to the type of help that went on there and the type of compassion that help was dealt out in. In other words, it's an opportunity for us to serve. And I think one of the important things for us to be doing right now is praying that God will watch over us and help us to take advantage of those opportunities in a good way. Again, because I think it's something that will affect the community, and therefore I think will affect the church in a very great way. And so keep that in your prayers. In addition to those who are mourning right now, we often think of the family. We have a family here in town that was not related by blood, but that was closer than any brother or son or father. And we want to keep everyone in our prayers that are experiencing that grief right now. Now, I want to tell you a parable, modern-day parable. It was one that Batzel Barrett Baxter told. It is not inspired, so I'm going to take some liberty with it, because it's been like 15 years since I read it. but this was the parable. A man had a beautiful field of wheat, and it was ready for the harvest. And so he hired people to come out and harvest that field. And when they got out there and looked at how beautiful that field was, ripe under the harvest, they were excited about it. They felt very privileged to be part of this harvest. And so the first thing they did, a very practical thing, was they started sharpening their tools, because they wanted to make sure, by the way, this was a few years ago before they had the modern equipment, started sharpening their tools so that they could get to the harvest in the most effective and efficient way possible. But then they started thinking, with such a beautiful field, these tools are kind of shabby. And so what they start doing is they start polishing the handles. They even start putting some fancy stones and even a little bit of jewels in the handles of those tools, so that they could be using tools that would be worthy of the harvest. And then the next thing that they did was they got to thinking, you know, the sun's starting to get up, it's starting to get a little bit hot, we're going to need a place to get out of the sun as we do the harvest. And so what they did was they built a shelter. And not just any old lean-to type of a shelter, they built a nice shelter. Shelter so nice, in fact, that they thought they should put a little plaque at the edge of that shelter to let everybody know in the years to come who would come and take part in the harvest, who had built that shelter. So they made their little plaque. Well, the day's gone. They come the next day. They're ready for the harvest. Somebody says, now to the harvest. And they realize that though they're dressed in work clothes, they're really not all that fancy for such a beautiful field. So they decide, we'll go home and we'll get fancied up for this harvest. And so they do that. And they go and they get their nice clothes, and the ladies get their hair done, the men get their haircuts, and they get back and, well, it's lunchtime. We're getting close to it. And so they think, well, we're going to have to eat before we get to the harvest. And so they go back home and they make preparations. And let me tell you, those harvesters had some of the best cooks in the panhandle. And so they really cooked some great stuff, and they got ready. They got back together. They had them a feast. Well, sun's starting to go down, and so they really can't do anything that day. So the next day, they're going to get ready for the harvest. Sure enough, they show up with their fancy tools and their fancy clothes at their fancy shelter, and they are ready for the harvest. Somebody says, "Now to the harvest," and then somebody else says, "What's that green cloud up there?" And it was hail, and they lost the harvest. Well, Basil Barrett Baxter's point was not that it's a sin to have a nice place to worship. His point was not that you don't need to get the tools ready for the harvest when we talk about souls. His point was not that we don't need to dress in an appropriate and respectful way when we come to worship our Father. His point was not that we don't need to ever have food when we get together and enjoy the fellowship. His point was we do not need to take our eye off of the reason that we're here, and that's the harvest. We are not here for purely selfish purposes. I hope you have a certain self-preservation motive and enough love for yourself that you're going to make sure that you are in the proper position before God for the judgment. You owe that to God. He's made all the preparations for you to be a good Christian. You owe that to God, and you owe your service to God. But then we need to start getting out and helping others come as well, to the best of our ability. And that means we need to be prepared for the harvest, and then we need to get to the harvest. I want to call your attention, if you would, to a passage that's found in Luke chapter 8. It's one that's very familiar to us all. And then I want to call your attention to another passage and see if you can see the relationship here. Actually, I want to read the other one first. It's found in 2 Chronicles 12. After that, we'll read in Luke chapter 8. But 2 Chronicles chapter 12 and verse 14. And the setting for 2 Chronicles 12, 14 is the reign of Rehoboam. Rehoboam is Solomon's son. If you'll recall, what we know about Solomon is that while he had an excellent start, very faithful man at the beginning of his life, as he went through his life, he became very worldly oriented. And because of that worldly orientation, he really harmed Israel because of that. He brought idolatry into Israel for the first time since they had kings, at least on a large scale. And he didn't raise Rehoboam in the way that David had raised him, Solomon. And so Rehoboam wasn't ready. And in 2 Chronicles 12, verse 14, talking about Rehoboam, it says he did evil because he did not prepare his heart to seek the Lord. Well, hang on to that thought. He did evil because he did not prepare his heart to seek the Lord. And then turn over to Luke chapter 8, and we'll look at this relationship in just a moment. Luke chapter 8 and verse 5. Farmer went out to sow his seed, and as he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path. It was trampled on, and the birds of the air ate it up. Some fell on rock, and when it came up, the plants withered because they had no moisture. Other seed fell among the thorns, which grew up with it and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on the good soil. It came up and yielded a crop 100 times more than was sown. When he said this, he called out, "He who has ears, let him hear." Now, if you're like me and have ears and heard that, but you wonder when you first come across it, what's he talking about? You're not alone, because that's the way the apostles were. And I have an idea that's the way a large part of the crowds were. They heard the parable of the seed and the soils, but it needed to be explained. And so Jesus did just that. Luke chapter 8 and verse 11. And as we go through this, notice the relationship between what we're reading and what we read about Rehoboam, who did evil because he didn't prepare his heart to seek the Lord. In Luke 8, verse 11, this is the meaning of the parable. The seed is the word of God. So now we know something we didn't know before. The farmer's going out to sow the seed. The seed's the word of God. Keep that in mind. And then it says in verse 12, those along the path are the ones who hear, and when the devil comes and takes away the word from their hearts, where was the seed sown? Well, the seed was sown in the soil. And now we're told that the devil is coming and taking the word from their hearts. So now we know something about what the soil is. It's our heart. The devil comes and takes away the word from their hearts so that they may not believe and be saved. Those on the rock are the ones who receive the word with great joy when they hear it, but they have no root. They believe for a while, but the time of testing comes and they fall away. The seed that was sown among the thorns stands for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they are choked by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they do not mature. I want to underline that. As an expert in thinking about life's worries, riches, and pleasures, I can tell you for a fact that every time that is my main focus, I do not mature for the purpose that God has put me here for. We'll talk about that a little more in a moment. Verse 15, but the seed on good soil stands for those with a noble and good heart. And now we have a math equation that shows you for sure that the soil is the heart, because he says good soil stands for a good heart. Well, take the good away from both of them, soil and heart. The soil stands for the heart. And in this case, it's good soil, talking about a noble and a good heart. And notice what it does. They who have that hear the word, retain it, and by persevering produce a crop. Well, when we talk about spreading the gospel, we really have to consider preparing the hearts of those who hear it, starting with ourselves. We have to make sure our motives are correct. Why do I want to serve God? Do I want to serve God so that I can get what I want when I want it? Or do I want to serve God because He's my Creator, He loves me, He's made provision for me to come back to Him when I sin? He allowed His Son, Christ, to die for my sins. And so what else would I want to do? And so when we start talking about ourselves, we have an obligation to prepare our hearts for the receiving of the Word. Rehoboam did evil because he didn't prepare his heart to seek the Lord. And we do the same today when we don't prepare our hearts. So we have that part, but there's something else that I think is absolutely critical to our understanding, and that is our duty to prepare the hearts of those whom we are trying to plant the word in. And I want to just read a few scriptures for your consideration and show you our obligation in them. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6, it says, train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not turn from it. We get so carried away with when he is old, he will not turn from it, God's part, his promise, that we forget our part, train a child in the way he should go. I'm not sure exactly what it means when it says when he's old, he will not turn from it. All I can tell you is I know exactly when he says train a child in the way he should go, that our obligation is to train children in the way they should go. God will fulfill his end of the bargain. Are we fulfilling ours? And so when we talk about preparing the heart, preparing the soil for our children, that's exactly what we do. Some of you men are like me, and we're very fortunate in your selection of a mate. Maybe even blessed. Maybe even an answer to your prayers. Carolyn, when she was raising our kids when they were little bitty, just about everything they talked about involved God. Do you see the beautiful flower that God created? Do you see the beautiful sunrise that God has given us? Are you enjoying the food that God has given to you? That's preparing their heart from a very young age. They can't even read yet, but their hearts are being prepared. They're being saturated with God. We did something else for our kids that we were very fortunate to do, and that was to start bringing our children to the worship from the time they were born, at least a few days after that. And then they were surrounded by people who loved them. And in Wyoming, they were really loved because AJ was the first child that was born in a number of years at that congregation. So he was celebrity. And so his earliest memories, if he can retain those, are of people just holding him and passing him around and enjoying him and smiling at him because it was so exciting to see this little one. And then with Cherise, well, a girl was now in the congregation. And so you know, AJ's thrown off to the side. He's four. He's happy to be thrown off to the side. But now there's a girl. And then when we had Becca, Becca was born with a warning flag. She had hair that just kind of stood up and went back like that. Just melted the hearts of the of our older ladies. Just they loved him. And the men just couldn't resist picking her up and doing things to make the older ladies' hearts go numb. But my point is, the heart was prepared there because from the very earliest age, they were loved at church. That was their earliest memories. That was a preparing of the soil to receive the word. We were also very fortunate. We had good Bible classes, good Bible class teachers. We had several good preachers in Wyoming. And so we took advantage of that. Prepared their hearts. As parents, when it says train a child in the way he should go, that's exactly what he's talking about. You prepare your children to receive the word so they can serve God, because that's what they were created for. In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 11, now we start having some commands as far as preparing the soil of other people and how we do that. In 1 Timothy 4 verse 11, command and teach these things. Don't let anyone look down upon you because you're young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in life, in love, in faith, and in purity. One of the things that we do in order to be able to prepare the hearts of those that we would like to bring the gospel to is we set an example for them by doing what is good. And it doesn't start when you're 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 years old. He says, don't let anybody look it down upon you because you're young. You start early. I still remember a couple of our young men. I think they were both in sixth grade. I was out in the summer mowing a lawn, and these two young men come up in a golf cart, and they say, do you know of any old ladies that need help? You know what an example that is? To prepare a heart to receive the word. It's an incredible example. You start young, and then you start young. We start our kids young, and then they start young. Now, I will say this, don't get me wrong, in 1 Timothy, when he writes to Timothy, there's a good chance Timothy was 30, 40 years old, and he's telling him, don't let anybody look down on you because you're young. He's not talking to an infant here, but the principle is there. It's never too early to start preparing other people's hearts to receive the word. Why? Because the harvest is there, and the harvest is beautiful. In Titus chapter 2 and verse 7, in everything, set them an example by doing what is good. In your teaching, show integrity, seriousness, and soundness of speech so that it cannot be condemned, so that those who oppose you may be ashamed because they have nothing bad to say about us. When it comes to representing the church, we do so with seriousness. It does not mean that we don't have a good time. I'm a big believer in a good time. But when it comes to teaching the word, there's a seriousness to it. That helps prepare people's hearts. But notice how he started, setting them an example by doing what is good. In Colossians chapter 4 and verse 5, be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. In Timothy, he said, set an example for the believers. And in Colossians, he says, be wise in the way you act towards outsiders, making the most of every opportunity. So when we come across people who are not yet Christians, we make the most of that opportunity by setting the proper example. How's your language? How's your temper? How are your morals? How are your ethics? How's your business practice? In everything we do, we set an example. And this says towards the outsiders, because they're the harvest. They're that beautiful field that needs to be harvested. In Luke chapter 8, when he said the seed is the word of God, and he talked about the path that was hard, and because the path was hard, it was very easy for the devil to steal the message away from their heart. We prepare people's hearts to receive the word as best we can. We're not talking about jamming an iron implement into the ground and forcing that seed in. We're talking about a proper preparation. So that their heart is not hard. Because if their heart is hard, they'll listen to the word and it'll just fly off of them. Their thoughts will be, I've seen too many Christians who are hypocrites. I don't want to hear that. You know who wins in that case? Satan wins in that case because he hates us. I don't know why. I just read that he does. And when you have a hard heart, when those that we are trying to help have a hard heart, that's not the time to sow the seed. It's not ready yet. And so we have some preparation to do. That's why we watch our example. In the instance where he said, those on the rock are those who receive the word with joy when they hear it, but they have no root. Well, we've all seen things like that. You can go out to these expansion joints out here. They have concrete at the base of the joint if they haven't cracked all the way yet. But soil will get in there and weeds will grow up in it, but they can't grow very big because there's no place for the root. There's no root. And so part of our preparation of the soil, whether it's our family or our friends or those we're in contact with, is to try and maybe help remove some of those things. Now, that's their part, first and foremost. But let's make sure that we're not putting any stones within that soil before we sow the seed. And then this, the seed on the among the thorns stands for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they're choked by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they do not mature. Everything good and bad in life can keep us from God if we're not careful. It can also propel us towards God. You have a hard time, that's an opportunity. You know, when people have the wildest success are during hard times, because that is the time that most people say, I don't even want to do it. I always loved it when I was playing a game against somebody that was a hard game. Whether the weather was bad or whether the instructions were hard or whether we were playing against a team that was just that much better, that's when the opportunity was there. But if you weren't careful, you'd look out there and you'd think, man, there are too many weeds out here, and you'll get distracted. Or you'll see the glittering attractions, that, oh, that's pretty, I think I'll go do that, and you'll miss what you're doing. You'll miss your focus, and your life will be grown up with all the weeds and the thorns, and you won't produce. So when we're trying to sow the seed among other people, one of the things I think that's very helpful is to remove the distractions that we can help remove. Again, they're first and foremost responsible for removing their own distractions, but we can do our part. And the final thing is this. When we see good soil, that's the time to sow the seed. Because that's the time they're most ready. We may not be ready. We may still want to go and polish our implements somewhere and put fancy stones on them and build a really nice structure and maybe have a potluck or two and wear nice clothes and that's be ready. But when they're ready, sow the seed. Because that's the time it's going to produce the fruit. Isn't it a marvelous thing God has done for us? If you and I will prepare our hearts to seek Him, we're going to have a really good life. Hard sometimes, but really good life. And then it's eternity with Him forever. And that's what we're here for. The invitation's open this morning. If you have not yet obeyed the gospel and you'd like to today, we'd love to help you with that. If you need the prayers of the congregation or if we can help you in any way, won't you come while we stand and sing?